The Off the Ball Podcast Network. The Rugby World Cup on OTB Sports Radio.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.
Sexton promotes at the 10 metre line. It's spinning!
It looks good.
Le drop de Jonathan Sexton!
Rugby World Cup on Off the Ball. Updates, analysis, and opinion across all OTB channels from start to finish. This is OTB Sports Radio.
OTB Sports Radio.
All right, you're very welcome along to the Rugby World Cup show here on Off the Ball, and we're off to a great start, it seems. Anyway, Ireland 27-3 winners against Scotland over the next 30 minutes or so. We're going to be looking back at that game with James Downey, who's joined us on the line. A reminder, we're streaming live at the moment on OTB Sports Radio, Ireland's first ever sports radio station, and we're also live. You can watch us across all our social channels on YouTube, Facebook and Twitter as well. If you want to get us in, get in touch, leave us a comment or a tweet on Twitter at TodayFM, and all of this is brought to you with thanks to Vodafone, team of us, everyone in. So a 27-3 victory for Ireland to start, and off to a flyer in those opening 15 minutes with a couple of tries, first for James Ryan and then for Rory Best, who just burrowed his way over after it looked like a maul close to the line had been stopped right at the end, but he did fantastically, the Irish captain, to get over. Following that, good move off a scrum, Tadhg Furlong pushing up ever so slightly off the back of it, and that led to him crashing over the line a few phases later, and the bonus point then, that all-important bonus point secured just 5 minutes before the hour mark, Andrew Conway getting over. Conor Murray took on a lot of the kicks in that game, made one of those conversions. That was down to the fact that Johnny Sexton handed him the team midway through the first half. Sexton went down a couple of times with what looked like maybe a quad or a thigh injury. We're going to have to wait and see how he is. He did manage to play up until midway through the first half, so maybe it was just a bit of tightness. We'll wait and see and hear what Joe Schmidt has to say after that. You'll be able to hear all the reaction, of course, on Off the Ball on our radio show from 1 o'clock. We're going to be talking to Ron Nogara on the line, and Keith Wood will join us as well. But at the moment, James Downey is there to speak to us. James, good morning. Thanks a million for joining us on the Rugby World Cup show.
Cheers, Neil. Good start to the morning.
Yeah, absolutely. A very good way to start off a Sunday morning. So 27-3. I don't think it was the most glamorous Irish performance that they've ever had, but when you're talking about first game of a Rugby World Cup, what's likely to be your most difficult game of the pool, overall, getting a win, getting a bonus point even, is an absolutely fantastic result. And was it just a case, really, of executing the basics well and letting the result take care of itself after that?
Well, firstly, I think, as you said, rightly say yourself, it's the first game. There was a lot of nerves out there, you could tell beforehand. You saw the Japanese game, how nervous they were. As you say, first hit out, and we're playing against Scotland. And it's just that 8 guys making a World Cup debuts as well. You'd expect a few nerves. But look, solid performance. As you say, we get the results. And it was a good display, especially from the pack. You know, there's a lot of questions. We still have a long way to go. But what a perfect start, though.
Mm-hmm. And executing the basics, I think, was the important thing. If you look at like the set piece, even the scrum was absolutely perfect again. The line out, which is something that had been a worry for the last probably year or two, performed quite well. I was a little bit surprised, though, when it came to the line-out. It wasn't really until midway through the second half where Scotland actually tried to contest any of the Irish line-outs. They were almost letting Ian Henderson and James Ryan or whoever was going up kind of just take those at will in the first half. And Ireland, you know, they weren't really under a lot of pressure.
No, and I actually thought that, yeah, I agree with you. I think they should have targeted Ireland's line-out a little bit more. I was surprised at how they didn't initially. And I think especially the first one, you know, I think Rory got his first one and was straight away into the game, and that kind of set the precedent for the game. But even you're looking at some of the scenarios beforehand, and we'd spoken about line out, obviously had been a massive area of concern for Ireland. But also you got to look at the back three. I think how Andy Conway played, how Jordan Larmour played. You know, a lot of questions that were asked of these players before this game, and how well they stood up to it. But it's a testament to those guys and how well they played, you know. But it was the basic game. It was your typical game of two halves with the weather as well. I think we were lucky in terms of first half. We played extremely well. We were very accurate in how we played in attack. And as you say, it's the basic things against a relatively poor Scotland side, let it be said, you know. Second half conditions, we were too far ahead and we just kind of shut up shop second half. But I do think that Scotland missed the trick kind of in putting us under a pressure at the line-out. But it's testament to the guys who are out there playing, and testament to Rory Best and to James Ryan and Henderson, who were extremely immense in that game.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of Scotland's attack, you kind of said Ireland kind of quashed that out. The two men in particular, it almost seemed like Ireland were kind of just defending against two Scottish players and putting all their efforts onto that. Finn Russell and Stuart Hogg, they're two real playmakers in that back line. Looking at the stats, Finn Russell, he carried the ball 8 times for just 23 metres, kicked the ball a lot, passed it a lot. Stuart Hogg, in the end, he did run for 107 metres. A good few of those probably came later in the game when, you know, it was a bit more opened up a little bit and it didn't really have the impact. But when you saw the way Ireland defended against the two of them, it seemed like every time one of those guys got their hands on the ball, early on it was Bundy Aki who was pushing up really quickly on him. Then once Chris Farrell was on, he was really much, very much in their face. Jacob Stockdale put in a huge hit on Stuart Hogg in the first half as well. It looked like it was a case of any time one of those two guys got on the ball, you just had to absolutely nail them and just take them out completely.
Yeah, and I think that must have been something that they'd spoken about beforehand. You got to give credit to Andy Farrell there. As you say, they're their two main ball carriers. They're their main threats out the back. And again, we've spoken in the build-up about how the kicking game from Finn Russell, how his little chips and even Stuart Hogg's kicks would actually bring Scotland into the game and change it and work that back three. But Ireland nullified them so well, you know. And I think, as you say, you mentioned some of the hits there. Bunny Akeek shooting out of the line. Not even shooting out of the line, sorry, that's not fair on him. They were coming up together, but the lines speed they brought, and it was putting that Scotland skill set under pressure, and especially second half, given conditions, they weren't able to deal with it, you know. And look, you nullify those two guys, they look around, and there wasn't too much to stand up and actually go, well, actually, we'll take the game to the Irish. So, obviously, they're their key players. You can take them out a small bit, and Finn Russell just didn't get going. You can look at the end of the game and look at body language. Body language says a lot, and they were just pretty disgruntled in how things went. Things just didn't click. And they were very, very frustrated.
Yeah, as you said there, like I suppose the phrase shooting up out of the line kind of implies that he's going off rogue a little bit and doing his own thing. It very much felt like the instruction was, you know, for those midfield players like Bundy Aki and Chris Farrell when it came on, that if Finn Russell is trying to, you know, bring the ball up close to the gain line or bring in Stuart Hogg in, that it's your job to get up out there. You have the license to do it. As a centre, you would have obviously played a lot, and it's an area you'd be very familiar with, that sort of role where you're under the instruction of, you know, maybe if there is an out half, you're the man putting him under pressure and you're coming up. How difficult is it to trust yourself to do that? Because I think, as we saw at one stage in the first half, there was one moment when Ireland didn't probably get up quick enough to Finn Russell, and it meant they got the ball out quick to Tommy Seymour out on the right wing, and he ended up gaining a lot of ground. Like, just in that moment, you know, it's a lot of pressure to put on one person to get that thing absolutely right, because if you don't get it right and you get it wrong, all of a sudden there's a huge hole opened up.
Yeah, it's that trust issue in having that unison of coming up together in the line. And if you're a little bit off, or one person out of that group is a little bit off, it's going to ruin the whole defensive play. And you can see how well they started on the outside and brought that line speed and really put pressure on the first two ball carriers. And as you say, if they do get it away, it's a bit hit or miss, you know. And if you nail them, you get the man and ball, they're right behind the gain line. But if they get it away, as you said with Tommy Seymour, you can put them into space. You really have to trust those two guys, especially from a 12 point of view, either side of you, you know. You really have to get your timing spot on. As you say, Finn Russell kind of got the ball away once or twice. But once you nullify them and everyone's in front of it, it can really galvanise a side, you know. I think some of the defensive exploits that they pulled out really galvanised that Irish side and just put them on the front foot. Confidence in the game as well. And it was a pity we lost Bundy, all right, but I think even Chris Farrell, when he came on, had a great game, and he added to that defensive physicality that they were imposing themselves so well on that Scottish side and were totally dominant.
Yeah, and Chris Farrell as well. Like, I mean, he came on, it was probably early enough in the first half when he came on, but in both aspects of play, in terms of defence and going forward, like in defence, made 8 tackles, didn't miss any, but also carrying the ball, he was an enormous threat as well. He had 9 carries for 53 metres gained. Is there a situation where, if Bundy Aki is fit, even Chris Farrell is actually almost forcing his way now into a starting team?
Certainly is, and it's one of the calls before the World Cup, I think, where people were saying, OK, will he, won't he? And it's a great decision now on Joe, you know. He came into the game so early and seemed so natural in that environment. he's always one who works so hard and tries things. And as you say, that ability that he had, that offload he gave out the back door to Luke McGrath, when, which could have set up a possible try for Stockdale, just shows the small little things that he has that he's able to bring into the game. He's not just a big man who can carry, you know. He's got some feet. He's got the deft touches that he has. And he's bringing it back as why Munster signed him, to bring him back from Grenoble, you know. He's always had these deft touches for a big man. And I think this could be a great chance for him in this World Cup. And look, standards didn't drop one bit when he came in. And if one thing they were raised, then I'd be totally confident in having Chris playing in there.
Mm-hmm. I saw Brian O'Driscoll at halftime. He was making a good point. And I think Chris Farrell was almost part of this as well, where Ireland in the first half, they weren't doing a huge amount with the ball. They weren't trying too much because they probably didn't need to. And also as well, they were using their defence as an attacking weapon in a sense, because, you know, there was one instance, I think it actually did lead up to the try. Someone came up and hit Stuart Hogg or Finn Russell quite early and got the ball away. And I think it was Andrew Conway fly hacked the ball down the pitch, and Ireland got lucky with a little bounce. It bounced up off the post and back into play, when I'd say Stuart Hogg was hoping it was probably going to run over the try line. And from that, Ireland get an attacking 5 metre scrum. It's just using that pressure, using that attack or that defence to push up and force a mistake and then counter-attack quickly off it.
Yeah, and it was that transition, I think, that's massively important. And yeah, it's one of those moments that you have in the game. I think Tommy Seymour dropped it, but it's dropping due to being under pressure, you know, as opposed to a bad pass or something. It's Finn Russell can feel the pressure coming from the outside. And even earlier on, you can see Gary Ringrose made an amazing chop tackle on Stuart Hogg. Bundy came in, turned it over from the penalty, kicked to the corner, and we get a try off it, you know. So it's these moments that are having a massive effect on the game, you know. And it's, as you've rightly said, and as Brian said, it's these defensive efforts are turning into attack opportunities, and we're taking the opportunities as well. So from two turnovers there, from pressure defensively, we've gotten two scores.
There were a few times during the Six Nations and in the warm-up matches when people might have said, you know, the Irish pack were getting a little bit bullied. They weren't really winning those collisions. They did it in a big way today, because I think they just used their forwards to carry the ball so much. I was looking through the passing stats. Ireland just passed the ball only 92 times in the 80 minutes. 63 of those passes were either Conor Murray or Luke McGrath. So you're taking scrum half instantly out of that. So you're looking at just 29 passes between the entire rest of those players across the 80 minutes. And it was just a simple game plan that worked, because it was just getting the ball out to the first receivers and setting up rucks and just slowly inching over that gain line, holding on to the ball and forcing Scotland really to make those mistakes.
Yeah, simple and efficient. You know, I think when you get into the 22, you get into that five meter channel, it's simple passes, not forcing the passes. And I think that Scotland could have taken a leaf out of Ireland's book. Scotland actually went wide so early a couple of times, when they were better off probably playing through the phases and actually getting a bit of continuity and getting themselves into the game, you know. So from that point of view, you got to look at the Scots and kind of say they should have taken a leaf out of our book. But yeah, I agree that it's a simple game we were doing. It was little one-out runners, but we were winning the game line. We were winning those collisions. And if a game plan's working, why change it, you know? I think conditions obviously second half dictated how we're going to play as well, but we're playing so well in that first half. I think we're happy with how we're doing it. But it was that defence, as you say. I think the defence is massive in terms of how we were able to kind of turn them over and flip it on its head and put the pressure right back on Scotland. And we didn't have to create these wonder plays. I know I myself personally was waiting for a kind of Joe Schmidt play that he normally brings out in these games. There was no need. As you say, that defence was putting them under so much pressure. We didn't need to have a miracle play or anything. It was a simple game. Like, rugby is a simple game, and we kind of complicate things. So if it's not broken, you know, leave it go.
Yeah. On those kind of Joe Schmidt miracle plays that he's famous for bringing out every now and again, do you think maybe over the next few weeks we might see one or two of those being tried out in a couple of games?
Yeah, no, I certainly do. I think there's a time and a place that they'll have worked in this kind of different scenarios in training. You're taking each team as you play them, you know, but I think it's they'll be playing when their points down. As I say, these scenarios would have been brought up in training. I just think today we just didn't need one. It's going to be interesting to see personnel wise what he does in the next couple of games. Few injury concerns. I think you see Peter Mahdy gone off, albeit Jack Conan had another superb game. I think Chris Farrell, obviously, we've mentioned him. Bundy, Johnny Sexton, like, is a quad groin. You know, it's obviously a concern when you're out half isn't taking shots at goal, but even didn't look very comfortable out there, you know. And I thought Jack Carty may have come on earlier, so that's another area of concern. But yeah, I do think he may look at a play somewhere down the line. Bit more pressure off us now, I think, against Japan, and just get this one out of the way, and I think we can rotate the squad even more coming in. But I'm certainly sure, given what happened yesterday as well, that it'll certainly be an eye in South Africa and in the background, and I think he'll have some things up his sleeve for that one.
Yeah, the big selection call this week was obviously Jordan Larmour. He was the person everyone was talking about, and not so much just the fact that he was in the starting team for Rob Kearney, but there was a, you know, people were wondering, should it be Conway at fullback? Should it be Jordan Larmour? You know, Larmour on the wing possibly. How did you think Larmour did in the end, especially with, you know, the unpredictability, I suppose, of the Scottish kicking, that, you know, it looked at the start of the game, they were actually varying it quite well. A couple of times they went long towards Larmour, and then Finn Russell went for that little chip, you know, chip in over the first line of defence, and just going from left to right of it, they were trying to run him around a bit, but slowly but surely it just, that impact was just kind of lost from Scotland, and it looked like he dealt quite well, didn't he?
Yeah, no, fairly impressed with him. You know, I do think they tried to manipulate that backfield and try and pull and push the wingers out of position and just kind of get that those combinations that aren't used to working together, just to see if there's any faults there. Couldn't fault him. He took his first one. Thought Conway was under a bit of pressure initially with a couple of ones, or there was one where there was no one anywhere near him, and he knocked it on under no pressure. But look, he brushed it off and he got back into it. And I was very impressed with how he reacted. Again, Larmour, when he gets the ball, he looks so dangerous in that first half. You know, he's beaten that first defender. They gave him a bit more time than I thought they would, but he's got to be highly impressed himself with how he played, you know. I certainly was. And I thought Scotland may have put the wingers under a bit more pressure. You know, I think Stockdale was caught out of position once or twice as well, and they put it in behind. And look, we dealt with it. I was very impressed how Conway reacted. He's just one of those players who just doesn't give up and gives everything out there. And he took his try extremely well. You know, it's as you mentioned earlier, we're talking about those simple things, that even the play for Stockdale, just a 9 to Murray to Stockdale up the wing, and the amount of yards we get, you know, and that's the attacking prowess that the back three have, which I suppose has never been in doubt. But just, I think the concern was there about the high balls and defusing the bombs and defusing Scotland's kicking game. But confidence in that back three now has got to be sky high, and there's got to be some guys who didn't start or who weren't involved who've got to be concerned about their position with how well replacements played.
Would you be inclined to give Jordan Larmour another run out at 15 next week, even just to give Rob Kearney another game to kind of ease himself back into things?
Depends how he pulls up, to be honest. Yeah, it's a 6-day turnaround. We don't have that much time. I think the Japanese have had that extra couple of days, you know. So they'll be a bit more rested. Depends how he pulls up. Again, depending on the injuries that we've had and feedback on. I don't think if he's going to rest Johnny for the next one and play Jack, I don't think he's going to want to rotate or shuffle too many. He won't want to make as many changes as possible. You know, I think he'd want to save that for the last two games. So there's a good chance. I think he deserves it, you know. And as you say, give Rob that extra bit of time. It's about kind of wrapping some of the guys up in cotton wool. And we don't want to sound like a foregone conclusion or anything, but I do think we have to be confident that, like, we can certainly beat Russia and Samoa, you know, and with not a full-strength side. So we have to be concerned about managing our player time, and I'm sure Joe has a plan in place.
Would you be inclined, even game plan wise, to make things much different for next week? I know we saw Japan on Friday night, and, you know, they struggle at times. You know, some of their handling was quite bad, and when they got the ball out wide, they did look very, very dangerous. Would you be inclined to kind of change things up, maybe in terms of defence, that you're not pushing up so much in the middle, you're protecting that space out wide, because that's where the real danger is with Japan?
I don't know, to be honest. I think it's going to be an interesting way in how they're going to do it. Whether this was specifically targeted just to take out and put pressure under Finn Russell and Stuart Hogg, or whether this is something further down the line. If you start doing that all the time, then an attack shape will obviously counter that, and they can stay a little bit deeper, little chips, small little things to take away that line speed. And obviously, if you do get caught, you're highly exposed because there's no one in behind. So I'm sure he might vary it up defensively. You'd like to see that intensity that they brought still there, and we can still hit behind the gain line without bringing as much line speed. But I still think they're players to target. So I'm sure Andy Farrell will try and change it up somewhat. I don't think they can constantly do that for the group stages and going further forward. Because it is quite tiring to kind of get up and back and repeat that line speed that you're bringing all the time. But it's an attitude as well. Defense is an attitude. And I think that if the guys bring the right attitude, there'll be certainly no problems in whatever defensive outlook that Andy Farrell will bring.
In terms of attack as well, would you possibly change things? Probably today was dictated a little bit by the weather. There was a lot of, you know, close-in carries. The ball wasn't put out wide too much. And if you're doing that on a day where maybe it's a little bit warmer, that can be pretty energy-sapping for a lot of those forwards.
Yeah, and look, I think another positive, we haven't shown too much. And as you say, we didn't do much. It was our little one-outs, our little tips. Down the line, I think we will have to adjust things. I don't think that's going to win us anything. You know, obviously nothing's won so far. But yeah, you'd like to see, of course you would like to see a little bit more expansive. But you've got to be controlled as well. And I think at the start, they'll have to respect opposition and play it tight, get the advantage, get the small wins. And then eventually a bit of fatigue will set in and the quality will rise. And I think that we'll be able to put teams away then later on. Again, you wouldn't like them to show too much. But I think certainly a little bit more expansive, obviously given conditions as well. Like today, first half was quite conducive to running rugby, but we kind of held it a little bit. Obviously a bit of humidity. Second half, not at all. You've got to play conditions and force errors. And I think Ireland did that extremely well. So attacking-wise, conditions will dictate, but I'm sure we have a few things up our sleeve.
In terms of other players that stood out, like we've mentioned Jordan Larmour, we've mentioned James Ryan, I think, as well, and Chris Farrell in part. CJ Stander was the official man of the match today. 15 carries out of him and 43 metres made. I know one of them was from one particular break, but he was someone who looked like he had a very good game and seemed to be really enjoying himself again. A lot of question marks about the standard of his carrying there had been over the last couple of months, but today he probably picked the best time he could have to have one of those really good games.
Yeah, and I think you kind of, you worry that teams work out how to defend CJ, and especially against England, he just got no change at all from that English defence. But today he was playing like a man possessed. And once he gets over that gain line, once he gets that first carry, he's into the game and he plays with confidence then. And I think that's massively key for this whole Irish side, never mind just CJ. But his carrying ability, as you say, once he's into it, he's on front foot, he's confident then, you know. And today, as you say, he's had a lot of carries. He's a big influence on the side, and especially when you lose someone like Peter O'Mahony as well. He's got to stand up and be counted, and he did. And I just think that, like, I thought he was superb today. But James Ryan as well. I think he had 15 carries as well, and 14 tackles, line eight steal, and a try. You know, and at 23, like, how far can this guy go? You just don't know. You know, and he's such an impressive individual. And every game, his average games are eight. You know, and obviously I think CJ deserved applause today, but it's just that unseen work that James Ryan gets through. He's certainly one, like he's one for the moment, and he's certainly one for the future. You can just see at 23 how far away he is.
Yeah, like with someone like Ryan, as you mentioned there, it seems like he's an eight every week. Are we kind of getting a little bit normalised to the standard that he plays at, where we're not really talking about him as much as we should, just because we're seeing this kind of thing every week out of him, and it's what you're expecting week in, week out?
Yeah, and I think that's it, you know, that's his standard, they're his levels. I don't think people question anything after a game ago, or they might say, he was quiet, if he was quiet, which is extremely rare. But again, today he just steps up. He steps up in all the big games. He just goes about his business and does it extremely well, which allows other people, like CJ, say, for example, today, who benefits, and Jack Conan, who benefited from that hard work that he does, and they get to carry the loose and people certainly remember these line breaks and offloads, but it's guys like James Ryan who can create all these opportunities for the rest, you know, and everything he does, he's meticulous about how he does it. And look, he's such an impressive individual for someone so young, as you say, 23, and to have such an impact and influence on this Irish side, he's a key player for us going forward.
Are we looking then really at like the natural successor in terms of captaincy for Rory West after the World Cup?
Yeah, I think he's certainly a future Irish captain. Whether it's the next one, I don't know. I'd certainly like to see him in there and give him a chance. I think he's enjoying his role at the moment where he just goes about his business. He doesn't have to necessarily have that pressure. Some people find the captaincy as a pressure, you know, and some people are quiet and unassuming and just get on with it and let their actions speak in the field, and some are talkers, and they're all very different, I suppose. And I'm sure we will see him as captain at some stage, certainly. And I guess you can kind of look at him, and you look at Paul O'Connell and see him as one of these leaders as well. And you could potentially say he aligns captain, just given the way he plays at the moment and how he just never lets a side down, and everything he does, it's just been immense to watch. And if he can keep those standards up, I'm sure he will be a captain at some point.
So overall thoughts then, just a good solid start, a way to ease yourself into the tournament. And you said a little bit earlier on that your eyes are already kind of going towards that quarter final, probably against South Africa, without getting, you know, ahead of yourself or getting cocky, because, you know, you think, you know, Scotland on paper were the toughest test coming into this, but looking ahead at that, it's just kind of a nice way to ease yourself into the tournament now.
Yeah, I think so. I think, look, obviously there was such a big focus on this game because of, exactly as you say, it's that Scottish, we know them so well. It's going to have a massive impact on the knockout stages, potentially. But I do think, look, we should beat the rest of the three teams, and we should win convincingly against the last two, I think. Just think that the Japanese, though, I think they might target the Scotland game, which could take an eye off for them. So for us, it's a great start, perfect start, exactly what we needed. Now we just got to kind of rally the troops, get the injuries taken care of, make sure everyone's 100%. And it's keeping that squad, it's keeping that 31 players pushing each other forward. And I think that the guys who stepped up today, and the bench in particular today, have really put some pressure on. And that's what you want going forward. I think if we're looking into how far we can go, I don't know, you know, but I just certainly think that a squad pushing each other will certainly make competition a lot higher, and certainly will bring some results in the field. So I do think we're in a great position at the moment. So, yeah, we've got to be smart in how we look after our players the next few games.
And away from Ireland, the knock-on effect of this is it's probably set up an absolutely mouth-watering game in the final round of the pool stage between Scotland and Japan, because if you think Japan, they've already got that win against Russia. Regardless of what happens them against Ireland next week, if they beat Samoa, they know they're going into that last game against Scotland with knowing that a win will put them into a World Cup quarterfinal for the very first time and send Scotland home as well. Like, that's exactly what you want to see with a host nation like that as well. Really something to play for in the last game. And it puts so much pressure on Scotland, who are probably a side that don't play too well when they're under a lot of pressure.
Yeah, and they're going to be extremely disappointed in how they played. And they've actually, I haven't heard how bad Hamish Watson is, but to lose someone like that as well, like one of their key influential players, it's going to have a big impact on that squad. And how they regroup will be interesting. Gregor Townsend's certainly going to have to rally them before they play. But as you rightly said there, I think that this Japanese side, we certainly didn't meet the ones who are going to be the last South Africa per se at the last World Cup. And there's always one team that suffers or gets a shock defeat, and we don't want it to be us. And you just feel, considering how they did it the last time, that the Japanese have a big performance in them with the crowd behind them. And as you say, if Scotland are going into that, if they're limping into that last game under pressure, the Japanese will be buoyed by the crowd. And that could see them over the line, as you say, and that will have a massive impact on the quarterfinals.
Mm-hmm. And thoughts on yesterday, South Africa, New Zealand, all things going to plan now, it's set up, it's South Africa in a quarterfinal if things go the way they are expected to go. What are your thoughts on that? What did you think of the game?
First 20, I was extremely worried and watching how South Africa plays. I said, if they can keep this intensity up for the rest of the game, it'll no matter who they play, they'll actually walk this World Cup. But again, it's that transition. It's that that transition from defence to attack from the All Blacks, and how they were able to find space and manipulate South Africa and push them around. I'm sure Joe will certainly have a look at that and take some things from it. Look, it's a mouth-watering prospect, isn't it? I think you see how two colossus play against each other straight away. It was brilliant. You know, I think some of the other games were a bit underwhelming. Obviously, as you say, conditions dictated it, but that one certainly lived up. Australia, Fiji as well, lived up to the hype. And again, they just ran out of steam. But South Africa, still, we know what they're going to bring, and they know it's all going to be down to that. It's one-off. It's cup rugby from now on. They could afford to lose that game and still get to a quarterfinal. They can't afford any more slip-ups now. It's knockout football from here on in. So it's going to keep us all on the edge of our seats.
Yeah, and even on the, you mentioned Australia and Fiji there as well. Obviously, there was the contentious moment, Reece Hodges' high tackle that went unpunished. So he was cited this morning. Not much use to Fiji now in those circumstances, but it is just kind of showing up. There have been a couple of those instances so far in the tournament. I know there was one in the Japan-Russia game as well. It is disappointing. We're just 2-3 days into the tournament, and we've had a couple of big calls like this where, you know, foul play has been let go, and we were told so much before the tournament that this sort of thing was going to be clamped down on from the very start. There was going to be zero tolerance whatsoever. And now what's going to happen is, as soon as there is a red card for something, we're going to say, oh, where's the consistency? We didn't have this a week ago.
Yeah. But this is why the TMO as well. I think that the TMO can come in and actually help the referee and tell them, maybe have a look at this, you know. Technology is there. Why don't we use it? As you say, like, it's no good to Fiji now. They've lost one of their best players, and he could have had a big impact in that game. And look, it's no good now. I'm getting cited, and it's not going to help Fiji down the line. It's may hamper Australia, but they've got to be consistent. And you're talking about it. It's been hyped so much about the high tackles and shoulders to the head and all these scenarios. But even the offside line seemed to be neglected. You looked at the France-Argentina game.
Oh, it was a complete
mess. But that's referees are focusing on certain things, and they're just letting that one go. And sure, teams are miles offside, and they're getting away with it. And you're going to play to the edge. Don't get me wrong. You're going to push the referee. You're going to push the touch judges. If they're not clamping on it, you're going to play to the edge, you know. And if you're getting away with it, you keep going until you do get pulled up in it. And then you go, right, we'll give that extra yard. Mm. But in terms of the high shots, I do think that TMOs kind of need to come in and get it. But yeah, look, it's going to be one of those if someone gets a red, and it's like a kind of Scott Barrett. And as I say, it might be a red. It's any shot to the head, you know, it's got to be dealt with severely. And that's the way it is. And as you say, you just want consistency across the board.
Mm-hmm. And final thoughts, James. We're probably about halfway through these first round of matches. Still a couple of big teams left to see. England in action at the moment, 18-3 up on Tonga. Two tries so far for Manu Tuilagi. There's 37 minutes gone there. So it's not quite the one-way traffic we were expecting to see in this. But of the teams you've seen so far, any surprises that you've noticed, or any teams have kind of let you down a little bit?
I suppose if you're... wouldn't say let down, but just Japan were a little bit underwhelming first game. But I suppose I give that to being a host nation. Nerves there and humidity. I do think that that's going to be the word that people are talking about a lot, especially when it looks dry and you can see the sweat in the players. That humidity is just, it's a bar of soap, the ball. So it's going to make conditions quite difficult. Again, I watched the first couple of minutes of that England game. Again, you'd expect England to kind of walk away with it a little bit towards the end. But they're showing respect, and they're kicking, taking 3 points, kicking corners, playing safe, playing simple, as opposed to getting caught up in a game, which I think Australia got caught up. Mm. They started to play the way Fiji did, and that suited Fiji down to the ground. A little bit disappointed then in how Fiji fell away. Would have been great to see that as a result. You know, you nearly need an upset or something to happen to really get everyone into it, because at the moment it's going according to plan. For everyone kind of looking in, and one or two more shocks would be good, but as long as it's not Ireland, it will be all right. But I'd like to see a shock somewhere along the line, just to kind of get everyone really into it.
All right, James, thanks a million for joining us, and enjoy the rest of the tournament. We might have you on again at some stage.
Cheers, Al, thanks.
James Downey there speaking to us, looking back on Ireland's win against against Scotland this morning. That's almost it for the Rugby World Cup show. Before we go, run through a couple of games coming up over the next few days. Georgia in action against Wales tomorrow. And we'll actually look now and speak to Georgia head coach Milton Haig. A couple of weeks ago, I had him on one of our episodes of Land of the Rising Scrum, where we were previewing the Rugby World Cup. He was kind enough to join us on the Skype line. He's coming to the end of his time at Georgia, having taken over just after the 2011 World Cup. So he's gone through two World Cup cycles, and to the point where just a few weeks ago they hosted Scotland in the first game that Georgia have ever hosted a Tier 1 nation in. So he was in really good form, and here's what he has to say about his legacy he's leaving with the country, stepping down after 8 years in charge.
Yeah, absolutely, Neil. I mean, I think, nobody would have any doubts, especially World Rugby, that... The eight years that have passed since I've been here, there has been a huge shift in terms of high performance, in terms of how we run our business, the business of rugby, and then just absolute participation of the sport. I can remember, if I look back at what we were when I first came here, we had, virtually, two or three grounds that you could play rugby. They were rugby grounds. Two or three that you could play rugby on. Now, we've got at least 20 to 30 pitches around the country. So the infrastructure has grown hugely in the last 8 years. With that, the sport's grown. And then also, along with that, our high-performance abilities, not just the national team, but all our age grades and our academies have also grown. So, I can remember when we first came here, there was two coaches and that was it, really. Myself and another guy from New Zealand, Chris Gibbs. But now when you look at the amount of full-time staff the union has, it's phenomenal.
Yeah, and Georgia head coach Milton Haig there speaking to us about what he hopes is the legacy he's left at Georgia. He's stepping down after the Rugby World Cup. They're back in action tomorrow, their first game of the tournament. They're taking on Wales tomorrow morning, 11:15 Irish time. Going on right now, England are 18-3 up on Tonga, although we have gone to a TMO for what is potentially a dangerous tackle there. I think it was Anthony Watson. Just kind of went down to ground just before he was kicking, and he seems to have caught a shot in the head there from one of the Tongan players. There's 30 seconds to go until the halftime whistle there, but in this TMO review, England 18-3 in front. Two tries so far for Manu Tuilagi. The rest of the points tagged over from Owen Farrell off the tee. Also coming up this morning, Italy, the opening game this morning, 47-22 winners against Namibia. So they've avoided a shock at times. They probably should have won by more, Italy, but that is, I think, the second highest amount of points Namibia have ever scored in this tournament. They will probably have their eyes on Canada as the real one, where they're going to try and make a shock and win their first ever game at the Rugby World Cup. So keep an eye out on that one for later on. But as I say, Wales against Georgia tomorrow, 11:15 Irish time. And then Russia, they'll have their second game on Tuesday morning, again, 11:15 Irish time. They're up against Samoa, who'll be going out for the first time this tournament. That's followed on Wednesday by Fiji against Uruguay. Fiji beaten yesterday by Australia. But the Rugby World Cup show, we are going to be back again on Tuesday morning at 12 o'clock. Right on noon. You're going to hear it on offtheball.com and across all of our social channels. And coming up on Off the Ball at 1 o'clock on News Talk, you're also going to, and News Talk and offtheball.com, you're going to hear Ronan O'Gara is going to join Joe Malloy on the line. We'll also hear from Keith Wood, and we might check in as well with Owen Sheehan, who's probably busy in the press conferences at the moment in Yokohama. Until then, though, thanks for watching, and we'll speak to you soon.
Rugby on Off the Ball
with Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of Us. Everyone in.
That was an Off the Ball Podcast Network presentation.